Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, thank you, Mark. Speaking of Mark, I don't know, I'm sure that this came up in the announcements, but Bethany Summer Youth Camp is coming up. Mark and I have spent a little bit of time talking together about that, and I'm getting really excited, and at the risk of saying the same thing over again, we would love to have everyone here help out with camp. Every little part is important, and it's great to have all the members of the body working together on something like this. So if Mark intimidates you and you'd rather come talk to me, I kid. But no, if you don't get a chance to talk to Mark and you'd want to be a part of camp and you happen to see me, Mark and I are kind of working out some of the logistics, so I know some of the things that need to happen, and we can figure out a place to plug you in. So it doesn't necessarily have to be the week of camp also. There's some other stuff that needs to get done that could get done. So talk to one of us about camp. We're excited. We didn't plan that. Is that okay that I did that? Okay, good. Okay, well, did everybody get to see the snow yesterday? Sounds like you guys are a little excited about a little bit of snow. Anybody not excited about the snow? Few people not excited about the snow. I was a little disappointed that it didn't stick around longer. Indeed. And Leonidas got to see, he got to benefit from that blessing. So I neglected to tell Lydia and Todd that we had had a second child. Most of you already know that. But as I was midstream, I said something about boys or something like that, and I realized I hadn't told them, so I had to back up. And for those of you that don't know, we were blessed with our second son, January 8th, Eleazar Joash, and he's been a blessing. I mention that because yesterday, apart from the snow, which I don't know if anyone else, I don't want to peg myself as a romantic because I don't think that's the right word, but I like the idea of a cold wintry day inside a warm house with a fire crackling, hot cup of whatever your favorite hot beverage is, chocolate, cider, coffee. For me, it's coffee, more or less. But yesterday came close. There was snow falling, and I stood at the window and had my little mug of coffee and just basked in the 10 or so seconds of that moment. And it was wonderful for that minute. Aside from that, yesterday was actually kind of one of those days. Melissa hasn't been feeling great. Leonidas was kind of a little bit off kilter himself, and so we, as a family, were having one of those days of, you know, it wasn't bad. I mean, you have bad days, you know. It wasn't a great day. It was just one of those days, and I'm, you know, trying to get ready to deliver the word of God, and I just am not feeling it. I'm feeling like it's a funky day. And so it was. I have down here a question that's ridiculously rhetorical. Have you ever had one of those days? I know we all have. One of those days can mean anything. And particularly, though, the kind of day that I want to talk about, and this is why I bring up yesterday, is the kind of day where you just go from being on top of the world. I mean, things couldn't possibly be better for you and your family and your friends than they are right now at this moment. And then in an instant, everything changes. And all of a sudden, you just feel like, could anything possibly be worse than this? And to illustrate it, I just, you know, picture a morning that's just going great. For the sake of argument in this illustration, let's say that you have a retirement account that's tied to the stock market, and maybe particularly a certain stock. And you wake up in the morning, and I know this isn't really how it works because the stock market would have closed and you would have already known this, but for whatever reason, you wake up in the morning and your retirement account has just taken off, doubled, tripled, well, whatever. You just, all of a sudden, you know, you have more money than you hoped to retire with, and things are just, it's like, whoa, this is great. And maybe something else that you had been trying to work out is in your email inbox, having worked out perfectly. And you you know, you get your coffee, and it's not too strong, it's not weak, it hasn't been sitting there for 30 minutes and cold. It's just tastes the way you like coffee to taste. And you go out the door and you turn on the car and turn the radio on, and your favorite song just started, and you get to listen to the whole song. You get to the train tracks, and as you're crossing over, the lights start flashing and the guards come down. Yes, I did not get stuck behind the train today. You get to work, and there's just the perfect parking spot is open and available, and you don't have to wait for it. You just pull right in, and maybe even as you're getting out of the car, somebody compliments you on your new haircut or your new jeans or something that you're particularly already excited about, and they notice it, and you just walk into the office feeling great, and the boss calls you in and says, you know, appreciate all of your hard work for the company, but we just don't have enough money to keep you on anymore, and we need to let you go. And that's the kind of day, that moment where everything changes. And it doesn't have to be as grandiose as what I just described. But there's a moment where in your mind, everything is just turning up spades. However, whatever the turn of phrase happens to be for you, things are good. And as you're thinking about that, maybe even, something creeps in and it changes. It could be literally something changes, or it could just be, and this is what's happened to me lately that I am drawing from to describe this. I'm driving along, and I'm thinking about how great life is. You know, my wife and I live in a beautiful state, work at a wonderful place, get to do amazing ministry, and I'm just pleased as punch about how life's going. And all of a sudden, thoughts start to creep in. What if I had decided to become an airline pilot, make six figures and fly everywhere and free air travel for my family? What if I had pursued my lifelong dream to be a professional wrestler, football player, basketball player, whatever, you name whatever I couldn't possibly accomplish? What if I made this decision differently? What if I hadn't gone this route? What if we're not even supposed to be here to begin with, and we ought to be back in California or in Washington or New Jersey? Pastor Herb's brother was visiting from China. Was that this last Wednesday? Was it really that? It feels like that was a long time ago. Man, I was like, I want to go to China. I mean, I almost asked them afterwards, so you guys need another family out there, you know? Lindy, I didn't even start going down that road, but your mind starts to go, what if things were better? What if things could be better? Or thoughts start to creep in. What would happen if I lost my job? What would happen if some tragedy occurred? And all of these thoughts, it doesn't even take a physical thing happening to derail the best day you've ever had. Somehow, things change. And we'll get to that in a second. Hoping that you guys have, at least one person have heard of this. Does anybody remember the book when I was growing up? I don't know if it predates that, but it's called Fortunately, Unfortunately. Anybody? My parents must have access to the weirdest library ever, because no one remembers the books that I remember. Story about a young man. I don't remember all of it. I looked the book up on Google, and it's like $10, so I wasn't going to buy it just to refresh my memory. It's suffice to say, this young man goes on an adventure, and every other sentence is either fortunately or unfortunately. Particularly what I remember is, as part of whatever he had to accomplish, he needed to travel somewhere. And fortunately, he was able to get on an airplane. And unfortunately, And I don't remember if the airplane was breaking down or he fell out. So, somehow he's falling. So unfortunately, he's falling. Fortunately, he has a parachute. Unfortunately, there's a hole in the parachute. Fortunately, and this is, you know, again, this is a child's book, so somehow this was fortunate, there's a pile of hay. Real life, that's probably not really going to help you much, but unfortunately, there was a pitchfork in the pile of hay. Unfortunately, or fortunately, he missed the pitchfork. Unfortunately, he missed the pile of hay. And this, I kid you not, this story goes on and on and on and on. As I recall, the story ends well. I don't remember what happened. I don't remember what he was trying to do, but everything somehow worked out for the good of this young man. The story that I want to look at this morning is from Matthew 14 and also Mark 6 and John 6, but we'll mainly be looking at Matthew 14. And it's kind of a fortunately, unfortunately kind of situation. Not quite with the fortune and unfortune, but just seems like it goes from certain highs to certain lows. And if you want to kind of follow along as we go, you can follow along in Matthew 14, and I'll kind of point out where the Mark and John accounts are different, mainly because I think it is interesting how they perceived this story. So in the beginning of this, we hear about John the Baptist being beheaded. We also hear about Jesus sends the disciples out with instructions on how to minister, and they return. So in Matthew's account, the disciples return and tell Jesus about John the Baptist dying. In Mark's account, we don't necessarily hear for sure that Jesus heard about John the Baptist. What we do hear is that the disciples return and tell him about how great ministry was. It was awesome. Things went well. This is great. Jesus was awesome. In both accounts, the next thing that happens is that Jesus takes the disciples away so they can be alone. Takes them to a solitary place. Takes them elsewhere. And I think it's interesting that Matthew perceived one thing and Mark perceived another. I think it's very possible, in fact probable, that both of those things happened relatively close to each other. That people came and told Jesus about John the Baptist, his friend, the one that had laid the groundwork for Jesus' ministry, having died, and also that the disciples came back and were excited about what was going on. And whether that happened all at once or hours apart, days apart, I don't know. But in all of our lives, we have lost people that are close to us. In some cases, maybe it was as a result of death. In some cases, it was circumstances of life. When you graduate from high school, people go to college. Some people take jobs. Some people go on to be in the NFL. Or the NBA. Whatever the case, you part ways. We have two boys. Someday, probably right around 18 years from now, they will be going on their own way. Maybe not. I think our plan for them is to go ahead and move on. And I try to remember that when I'm holding Eleazar at 2:30 in the morning, trying to let him know that the food is on its way. It's not there yet, but it's on its way. We all experience that feeling of losing someone that's close to us. We also all experience the high, if you will, of ministering for God. Might be the smallest little thing, running into someone at Walmart, they're down, and somehow through having a conversation with you, you can tell that they leave with a little more perk in their step. And something about that makes you feel good. Wow, that's cool. A friend calls you, maybe one of those friends that you lost because they moved to another state calls, and they're really going through it. Their family, friends, something, their work, something's going on and they're struggling, and you're able to minister to them through the Word. They feel good. Pray with them. It feels good. It's positive. Regardless, the model that Jesus is laying here is go spend some time alone with Jesus. Unfortunately, in their attempt to do so, the crowd of people watches them go, figures out where they're going, and rushes and beats them to the place that they're trying to go. So they, all excited to go hang out with Jesus, just kind of decompress, and the crowd is there. And the Bible says that Jesus was moved with compassion. One instant says that it was because they were like sheep without a shepherd. Something about that always resonates with me. Jesus saw them and was moved with compassion. Now Matthew says that Jesus healed the sick as a result of being moved with compassion. Mark says that he teaches them many things. Again, I think it's interesting. If you look at Mark and Matthew's response to in both of those situations, it's a different personality almost, what they saw. Mark sees that the ministry is happening and things are busy, and Jesus says, let's get away and let's bring it down a notch. And then when they see the crowd, Jesus teaches them. He instructs them. He directs them in the way they should go. Matthew sees Jesus overwhelmed with, well, maybe not overwhelmed, I shouldn't use that word, but Jesus experiences the emotion, perhaps, of loss, and as a result says, let's come away and go be alone. And then when he sees the sick, he heals them. Mark sees him teaching and instructing and action. Matthew sees him healing and spending time. But again, in our day-to-day, as we're in step with Jesus, opportunities will come. And knowing in that moment, do I lay hands on this person and pray for a miraculous intervention and a healing? Or do I take them to the Word and instruct them in what they should do? Sometimes it's appropriate to pray for someone. Other times it might be appropriate to say, you know, maybe you should go to the doctor. Being in step with Jesus lets us know which and where and when. The disciples want to send the crowd away to go eat. Apparently there's not a McDonald's in the field that they're in, so they want them to go to the villages. Jesus says, no, let's just feed them. Now here, I think, it doesn't specify which disciple says this, but I think I would be with the disciple that wants to send the crowd away. Okay, Jesus, we already had some great ministry, and you just heard about John the Baptist. So we came here to get away from the crowds. Remember, that was kind of the point of why we're supposed to be here. I understand it's good. We prayed with them. We healed them. We taught them things, but I think we're done with that now, and everyone's just kind of hanging out, and it's getting late. I'm kind of hungry. I'm sure they're hungry. Let's go back to the original plan and just get away. Let's go hit up a Denny's and let the crowd go find their food, and we'll be good. Let's decompress. And of course, Jesus says, no, let's feed them. And they do. And I don't want to spend a lot of time on that right now. We can do that some other time if you'd like. But they feed them. Then Jesus sends the disciples away. And then he dismisses the crowd. Now, I don't know if there's any significance there, but I find it interesting that Jesus didn't say, all right, you guys got it from here. I'm going to go take a nap. Come wake me up when the crowd's gone. Jesus sent the disciples away. Like, you guys go spend some time alone. I'll take care of this. And I don't know what kind of cleanup was involved, but I know somebody has to clean the sanctuary after we all leave. I'm not saying we're messy people. I'm not saying that we leave our trash laying around. I'm just saying, someone has to clean up when there's been a crowd somewhere. And this was a big crowd. I don't think that Jesus necessarily went around picking up everyone's trash. I'm just saying, Jesus did the work of ending this time. He sent the crowd away. And then he goes and spends time alone, presumably with Father God. In the midst of that, the disciples, they've been rowing for however long. I mean, I got to figure, Jesus had to take him a while to get the crowds out of there. Then it had to take him a while to get to wherever he went that was a solitary place. And then obviously he's going to spend some time with God. You don't go somewhere to be alone and then come straight back. You actually spend some time being alone. All that time the disciples were rowing, and if you've ever looked at the body of water that they were on a map, it's not very big. So I don't know exactly what was going on. I don't know if they were going around in circles or if the wind was that strong, but they'd been going for some time. And it says, right before sunrise, Jesus walked to them on the water. I don't know about you, but I've had some long days, and usually right around, if I'm still awake right before sunrise, it's been a long night. And if it had been a long day before that long night, that's a really long time to be awake. Anybody ever watch 24 when that TV series was on? There was always a 24-hour day, and it stretched for a season of television, an hour at a time. So you got, in a 24 weeks, half of it, I guess they probably condensed it somehow, but this day that Jack Bauer had to go through and all the crime he had to fight, and he was usually ended up tied. It was like the ultimate James Bond movie in a TV series. That's a long day. Jesus is walking on the water. The reason I wanted to be in Matthew is that Peter asks him, "If it's you, Lord, call me to come to you." And Jesus, of course, says, "Come on." And Peter steps out of the boat. And this is what I want to focus on. Jesus calls Peter. Peter steps out of the boat. And from what I understand, these weren't little rowboats. This was a substantial boat that you had to climb out of. And he's walking on the water, and he's got his eyes on Jesus. And a miraculous thing is happening. And I want to read the verse, because I don't want you to... Part of what I'm going to say is maybe making some assumptions. Verse 30 in chapter 14 of Matthew. "But when he saw that the wind was boisterous, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, he cried out, saying, 'Lord, save me.'" It doesn't say why he saw that the wind was boisterous. But we know that he's getting out of the boat, he's walking on water, and he's looking at Jesus, and when his eyes come off of Jesus is when he starts to sink. We know that. What I'm speculating, and this is probably because of my own personal experience in my life, is that it wasn't the wind that took his eyes off of Jesus. He saw the wind because he took his eyes off of Jesus. I think he took his eye, he may have, and we maybe sometimes take our eyes off of Jesus because what we're doing is so awesome. Right? I'm coming to Jesus. In a split second, my mind changes that to, I'm walking on water. I can't walk on water. This is awesome. This is the greatest thing. And in that second, I'm still doing the same thing. I'm still doing what Jesus called me to do. Jesus said, come. I'm walking on the water to him. But where my mind is at shifts, where my eyes are at shifts. And instead of coming to Jesus, walking to Jesus, I was looking at a gentleman at Lydia as I was saying this. When I'm walking towards Jesus, and I was like, sorry, I'm not trying to make you out to be Jesus. I just take our eyes off for just the slightest second. And that was when Peter saw the wind and became afraid, and he started to sink. And he called out, "Lord, save me." And immediately Jesus stretched out his hand and caught him. Isn't it wonderful that in spite of us, God won't let us drown? And I think, going back to my visual story of me driving down the road thinking, oh, life is great, all of a sudden, I see the boisterous wind. Because all of a sudden, instead of looking at Jesus and following him, took my eyes off of him for just a second. And it wasn't even to look at something sinful. I wasn't tempted by a dollar menu cheeseburger that was being advertised on a billboard. I wasn't tempted by thoughts of grandeur. I was simply thinking, wow, God, this is really awesome. But I was looking at what God was doing. I wasn't looking at God. After that, Jesus gets in the boat. The storm calms down. The wind dies. They make it to where they're going. In one account, in John, and I encourage you to go read this later if you'd like, there's this sort of murder mystery thing going on where the people in the town are all like figuring it out. They're like, all right, they're counting the boats. All right, one boat left, and we saw the disciples get on the boat and go. In fact, this whole thing might be why Jesus sent the disciples away and dismissed the crowd. I think maybe he just wanted to have this moment that John records. One boat left, and there were people there. The disciples were on it. And there's no other boats that have left. And the disciples are over there. And we know they didn't come back to pick him up. But Jesus isn't here. He's there. And they're kind of like puzzling over this. And as I said, sometime, John chapter 6, go check it out. Read Jesus' response, because I think it's a great, very interesting study in how Jesus operated while he was here. But that's the long day for Jesus and the disciples. But what are our eyes fixed on? What is it that we draw our strength from? What do our feelings about our life, what causes them to rise and fall? What are the things for you? What is the place for you? For me, a lot of times it's driving. And I'm thinking and I'm praying and I'm seeking God, and all of a sudden I'm thinking about instead of seeking God. What are the things for you that take your mind off of it? And it's not just one thing, for me anyway. One thing would be people. You know, I mentioned earlier you're getting out of your car at work and somebody compliments you on your, you know, fancy new pants or your shoes or something. A lot of times our feelings about ourselves can rise and fall on our perception of what people think about us. Hanging out with the guys and I say something that I mean to be funny and they all laugh and I feel like I've succeeded. I was funny. Even talking right now, if I say something I mean to be funny and I see some smiles, yes, got it, good. Conversely, I tell a joke, everybody looks at me like I'm an idiot. That doesn't feel so good. Oh, man, I've just missed it. Driving from Todd to here. By the way, what's that church road by the airport? Bellevue Church Road. Finally hit that this time. I always shoot right past it and go halfway around the curve and have to come back that other little leg. For those of you that drive here, you know, I don't know how many times I've made that trip. I finally got it right. But I'm thinking about how Todd went, and I'm thinking where I missed and where I... People. Psalm chapter 3. This is when David was fleeing from Absalom, because Absalom, his son, was trying to steal the kingdom from him. Again, talking about my boys as they grow up. I can't imagine a father dealing with how much he loves his son, and at the same time, his son is betraying him and trying to take advantage of him and ruin him. And the difficulty of that. This is what David wrote when he was going through that. Lord, how they have increased who trouble me. Many are they who rise up against me. Many are they who say of me, there is no help for him in God. But you, O Lord, are a shield for me, my glory and the one who lifts up my head. I cried to the Lord with my voice, and he heard me from his holy hill. Psalm 121, if you're trying to keep up, I'll tell you what the psalm is, and then I'll talk about why I'm sharing it. Psalm 121 is the next one coming up. Talk about circumstances. Things are going good, things are going bad. Dealing with what are my circumstances now, what are my circumstances going to be, how am I going to get out of this? Psalm 121, I lift up my eyes to the mountains. Where does my help come from? The other day I was pouring my coffee and meditating on this verse and thought, I wonder if David or the psalmist here would have said, if he had coffee, I lift up my eyes to the coffee pot. Where does my help come from? Because I really think that's the heart of this, is what do we look to for our help? And the physical reaction is to look to something maybe majestic like the mountains, maybe something strong like coffee, maybe something solid. But the verse 2 comes in with, my help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. He will not let your foot slip. He who watches over you will not slumber. Indeed, he who watches over Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord watches over you. The Lord is your shade at your right hand. The sun will not harm you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will keep you from all harm. He will watch over your life. The Lord will watch over your coming and going, both now and forevermore. We're going to look at Psalm 61 next. Feeling overwhelmed. My dad, when I was growing up, was a contractor, and he always said, when it rains, it pours. And he meant that in reference to whenever he did a roofing job, it literally would rain as soon as he started a roofing job, but also in terms of work coming in. He would have no work. All of a sudden, 15 phone calls would come in, and he had to figure out which job to take and which ones to turn down. And sometimes in our lives, whatever we do, it seems like everything hits at once. And it can be so overwhelming to try to sort out what's the priority here. What do I need to be doing? Psalm 61, "Hear my cry, O God. Listen to my prayer. From the ends of the earth I call to you. I call as my heart grows faint. Lead me to the rock that is higher than I. For you have been my refuge, a strong tower against the foe. I long to dwell in your tent forever and take refuge in the shelter of your wings. For you, God, have heard my vows. You have given me the heritage of those who fear your name. Increase the days of the king's life, his years for many generations. May he be enthroned in God's presence forever. Appoint your love and faithfulness to protect him. Then I will ever sing in praise of your name and fulfill my vows day after day." And finally, just a small clip from Psalm 139 regarding the ups and downs, the times where we're feeling great, the times where we feel like, man, I don't even know why I'm here. What have I accomplished? What have I done? Have I helped anyone? Has my life meant anything to anyone? Psalm 139, starting in verse 7, "Where can I go from your spirit? Or where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend into heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, you are there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me, and your right hand shall hold me." We're human. God made us to have emotions and feelings. He knows we have ups and downs. He knows that, like Peter, you know, step out of the boat, we're going to be doing exactly what he's called us to do, and we're going to totally mess it up. Whether it's because we're all of a sudden become afraid, because we see something out of the corner of our eye, or if it's because we just took our eyes off of him for a second to revel in how awesome what we're doing is, there's going to come a time where we need to readjust what our eyes are fixed on. I know we all know the hymn, "Be Thou My Vision." I want to read the words of "Be Thou My Vision." It's an old Irish meditation that was turned into an Irish song and then was translated into English and then put to music, maybe not in that order. This is a version that's readable to us today, although it is kind of a old English. It's not as old as it would have been, and I definitely am not going to try to read it in Irish, so forgive me for that. If you want to close your eyes and just meditate on the words of this hymn as it applies to what God's speaking to us. "Be thou my vision, O Lord of my heart. Not be all else to me save that thou art. Thou my best thought by day or by night. Waking or sleeping, thy presence my light. Be thou my wisdom and thou my true word. I ever with thee and thou with me, Lord. Thou my great Father, I thy true Son. Thou in me dwelling and I with thee one. Be thou my battle shield, sword for the fight. Be thou my dignity, thou my delight. Thou my soul's shelter, thou my high tower. Raise thou me heavenward, O power of my power. Riches I heed not, nor man's empty praise. Thou mine inheritance now and always. Thou and thou only, first in my heart. High King of heaven, my treasure thou art. High King of heaven, my victory won. May I reach heaven's joys, O bright heaven's sun. Heart of my own heart, whatever befall, still be my vision, O ruler of all." Let's pray. Father, thank you that in a world that's so uncertain and so ever-changing, you are constant. God, our hearts and our eyes and our minds can so easily wander from being fixed on you. Help us moment by moment to reaffix our eyes on you. And as we feel like we're about to be overwhelmed by thoughts, by fears, by circumstances, thank you that we can again and again call out to you, "Save me, Jesus." And know that your hand will reach out and save us. Thank you for your word. Thank you for your presence. May we spend as much time as we possibly can in both of them. In your name.